Okay, so let's get started. Welcome to CS50's walkthrough for problem set two. This problem set, well, how'd you guys like problem set one? Was it good? Was it fun? Let's do like a thumbs up, sideways, down. All right, mostly thumbs up, like one thumbs down in the back who just changed his mind to thumbs up. Okay, good. So problem set two is similar in that you'll be working in the same environment in your terminal and your PuTTY. You'll be working with C, but it's a lot more exciting because we're actually going to be doing some cryptography work, working with the command line a little bit more. So you'll see it'll introduce you to arrays, to a whole series of new concepts. That'll be very exciting. But before we dive into problem set two, we're going to talk about things that concern all problem sets, so namely design and style. So you guys are going to be getting your first grades back this coming week, and a lot of you are going, and so Scratch will only be graded on correctness, really. It's not going to have a design and style component because you haven't actually been writing your own code, but in the future you'll see a design score and a style score. And I talked a little bit about this in the previous walkthrough, but just to reiterate, for design, you want to ask these questions that are on the slide. So is my code straightforward, straightforward to read? Are you wasting CPU cycles? So in today's problem set, we're going to talk about a lot of different ways to implement the solutions to these problems, and some of them are going to be very clearly bad style. And we're going to discuss why and make sure that you avoid those. And we're going to talk about making your code not so complicated. It doesn't have to be that complicated. Really, it's the simplest code that's sometimes the most effective and the best designed code. So if you're writing more lines than you should be, if you're copying and pasting, all of this is pretty much bad design, and we'll try to help you avoid that. Was there a question over there?
What's a CPU cycle?
Oh, a CPU cycle is so like every time you enter a for loop and perform one operation, like addition or something, that's one CPU cycle. So you want to minimize, and you know, the amount of time that your program takes to run is dependent on how many times you enter these loops. So for now, it doesn't really matter because everything's going really fast. But if you introduced a huge data set, it would matter a lot how many times you had to go through a for loop. And you'll see this in later problem sets, but it's important to start thinking about it now. Any other questions on good design? Okay. So then the other thing, of course, is style. So these are the questions you want to ask. It's three things. It's commenting. So did you comment every major step you took? Is it clear from the comments what you're doing and why? And why you're taking a certain approach? So maybe you'll have come up with a really innovative, really clever way to solve a certain problem, and you'll want to explain in the comments how you came up with that method so that we know. Of course, if you've used any sources, you'll also want to comment what source you used to get the information that you got. So we understand that there's a lot of stuff available on the internet. Make sure that you cite everything that you use and make sure. And if there's ever a doubt, you know, ask your TF or ask at office hours if it's okay to use certain code that you found. But always make sure to cite it in the comments. So variable names, you want to make sure that you have variable names that make sense and that are unique. Now, so at office hours last week, there were a lot of variable names that were X, Y, Z. I completely understand your impulse to do this because this is how you're used to thinking about variables, but really it makes a lot more sense if your variables are coins in Greedy, for example, or change, or something like that makes a lot more sense and that is easier for your reader, for your grader, to understand what that variable means as they're reading through the code. So variable names are very important that they're unique. Prettiness. So this just means that your code is not longer than 80 characters across, so that if you're in the standard-sized window, you can see all of your code. You don't want that, you know, that dollar sign that you get if you start writing more than 80 characters. Yeah, we have some nods. So you want to avoid that. So you want to make sure that you're always within 80 characters across, and you want to make sure that you indent uniformly. So you can choose where to put your brackets around an if block, right? Like if something do this, you can choose where to put the brackets, but make sure that you're always uniform in where you put them and where you indent. Okay, so make sure that your style is pretty, as we say. Any questions about style? Okay, so here's problem set two. It has three problems, just like last time we had three main problems. So one is the old man song. This is obviously a repetitive song, if any of you know it. So it's going to teach us how to make some design decisions regarding repetition and avoiding repetition, factoring out bits of code that we're going to need to repeat. Then we have the Caesar cipher. So this is a way to encrypt messages, and we're actually going to implement a Caesar cipher. And this is mainly going to be an exercise in command line arguments. So you know the user is going to give you input at the command line when they run your program, and you're going to know how to deal with this input. And it's going to be a lesson in arrays, because we're going to treat words as what? What are we going to treat strings as?
Arrays
of? Characters, arrays of chars, yeah. Great. And then we're going to do the Vigenère cipher, which is a bit more of a complicated cipher, but will also help us think about arrays and even two-dimensional arrays. So arrays of arrays. So basically an array of strings is an array of arrays of chars. So it's arrays of arrays. Kind of cool. So we're going to be doing those three problems in this problem set and in this walkthrough. So are we ready to dive in? Everyone? Okay. So the old man song. Does everyone kind of recognize this song from your childhood? From at some point in your life, maybe more recent, from reading this problem set maybe? Okay, so basically very repetitive song. Here I have the first two verses, and what is in bold is what changes in the different verses. Right? Does that make sense? So in the first one, it'll be he played one, in the next one, he played two, in the third verse, he played three, et cetera, et cetera. So that's kind of a variable string right there. And then the next line, you also have this phrase that keeps changing in the different verses. But aside from that, the song is pretty much the same text, correct? So what's one way? So there are several ways of implementing oldman.c, right? In oldman.c, you're going to be asked, or your program oldman, which you will write in oldman.c, you'll be asked to write out this song, right? So there are many ways to do this. One of these would literally take you 1 minute, if that. And what would that way be? Copy what? Copy and paste the entire text, and how would you print it out? Exactly. So using the answer was printf. So if you use just one printf to print out the entire song, you've done the problem set, right? You've done this part of the problem set, right? You've printed out the song. It's correct. If we run it, we'll get, you know, exactly what we wanted, and we'll give you a good correctness score. But what would happen in your style if you maybe indented correctly and commented everything? It might be fine too, right? But what would happen to your design in this case? Probably a big fat zero, right? Like this is the worst possible design you can come up with because it's literally just copying and pasting. You have this huge block of text. There's no thinking involved. To do that, you literally would have had to think for less than 5 seconds. So basically, there's a better way to do this, obviously. And what is that? What's a better way of implementing this, considering we have so much repetition? Yeah, using some kind of loop, right? So we know that we have this text that's not going to change, and we want to print it how many times? 10 times, right? So we know that we're going to go through this 10 times. It makes sense to have some sort of a loop to allow us to do this. So this is better design. What kind of loop? For loop, right? If we want something to happen 10 times, it's not the only way to do it, but a for loop seems to make sense, right? So if I wanted something to happen 10 times, what would my for loop look like? Okay, great. So the answer was 4 int I is equal to 0, I is less than 10, I plus plus. And then we'd get 10, right? So that's a perfectly great way of doing this for loop. If I had to nitpick, I would say that the 10 in that case, in terms of style, looks like, well, why is there a 10 there? You know, the reader, of course we all know there are 10 verses, but the reader might say, well, that's weird, why is there a 10? You know, let me just step back for a second and think about why this for loop is going 10 times. So maybe it would be better to store 10 in a variable called something that makes a lot of sense, right? And this is just style practice so that everything in your code is crystal clear. So a variable called verses, for example, and you can call it anything you want. But then we know that we're going through the for loop for as many verses as we have. Make sense? And your answer was absolutely correct. I'm just trying to bring out some style principles. So I'm going to have this for loop that's going to go through the verse. And for each time you enter the for loop, what do you want to do? So you're entering the for loop the first time. What's the value of I? Okay. So each time that you go in, what are you going to do? You're going to print some sort of text, right? And now, depending on what I is, you're going to have to figure out, well, what text do I put in those areas that are changing, right? So for the one and for the on my shoe, on my thumb, right? So what are some ways that we can, so here the question is, how do we store these parts that are changing? So here I gave you two ways. So can anyone, just looking at array, can you think of how you might use an array to implement this kind of changing behavior in the verses? Anyone? Yes. You stick in the array that you want? The corresponding what? Right, okay. Right, so together you guys have it. So the answer is you would put the text that's not changing inside of the for loop, or the while loop, if you're using a while loop, doesn't really matter. You put the text that's not changing inside that loop, and then outside that loop, if you were to use the array method, then you would have an array that stored the parts that are changing. And you probably have more than one array, right? Because there are two things that are changing. There's the number, so he played one, he played two, he played three. That's changing, but then you also have, I guess, like, where did he play? Like, on my thumb, on my shoe, I don't know any farther. So then you have that array that's also changing. So those are kind of two arrays that you would create to store the changing parts. And then inside your for loop, you would have to find, inside that array that you defined, the value that you want in that blank, right? So for he played one, you'd want that array that's storing all the numbers. Which part of that array would you want? Which element of that array? For one. Well, you're in the array that's storing all the numbers, so which number do you want? You want the number one. And where is that in your array of numbers? Exactly, it's at zero, right? And, and incidentally, what is I the first time you're in your for loop? Make sense? Oh, it's zero for the camera. So I is zero the first time you go in your for loop. And it just so happens that you need the zeroth indexed variable in your array. Right? So if you put two and two together, does that make sense? That's kind of a, it should have been a big aha moment, was it? Let's have everyone, aha. All right, guys. Thanks. Okay, yes?
What does the zeroth index have to do with the I being zero?
Okay, so the question was, what does the zeroth index of our array have to do with I being zero? So if you have a block of text, right, and you have to sub in certain variable amounts, you're going to have to refer to what you want to put in there, right? So we're proposing that one way of doing this is having an array that stores all the possible words you could put in that blank. So for the first phrase, it would be one, two, three, the words, one, two, three, right? So you have to tell your printf which one of these words to choose. So when I is zero, you want the zeroth word in your array.
Can you explain what an array is?
Yes. So what the question was, can you explain what an array is? So can someone tell me what an array is? Does anyone know what an array is? Yes.
It's a way of storing data.
It's a way of storing data, exactly. So it's a way of storing, so for example, an int can store one int. An array of ints can store X number of ints, right? And they're all kind of chained up together so that you can refer to them. Is this argv thing? We're going to get to argv. Argv is an array. But argv is not the definition of an array. Argv is an instance of an array. So it's like one of the arrays that was created.
How do you create an array?
Like, that's what I was just going to do.
If I want to create an int, I know it's just like int
equals. Right. So that's what I was just going to do. So the question was how to create an array. Okay, so we're just creating an int. We're not creating an array right now, just for the purpose of this example. So int num equals 5, right? You've seen this. This is like the simplest thing ever. Okay, so we've created an int. The variable name is num. We've stored the number 5 in it. Okay, now if we want to create an array, we kind of have the same building blocks, right? So we have its type. This is the type, right? So whether it's an int or a char or a string, this is its name. So we're going to name our variable. And then these are the values we want to store in it. Right? So value. So the same thing is going to happen for an array. So an array would still have a type. So let's say we want an array of integers. So we would have int, and we can name it myArray. And then what do we put to make this look like it? What do we do to signify that this is an array? Exactly. Then we put the brackets here. Okay? And so you can leave the brackets blank, and like you can leave nothing inside them and no spaces. So just the end of the name, open bracket, close bracket, equals, and then put values inside of it. And then it will just assume that assume the size of the array as the number of elements you've put in it. But better practice so that you show that you know exactly how big this array is that you're creating is to actually put the size of the array in here. So let's say we wanted an array of 10 numbers for our 10 verses. We would put a 10 inside of here. Then we put an equals. And then here we put our values inside brackets. And I really, really, really can't draw brackets. Like it's something I've really tried to learn how to do and can't. But so you put it in brackets. And if it's strings, we always put strings in double quotes, right? But since we're doing ints right now, I'm telling you how to do a string because you would need to do strings in the problem set. You'd need to put strings in your array if you chose the array way of doing this. But for ints, you would just put the ints. So 1, 2, 3, 4, et cetera, up to 10. And then a semicolon at the end. Does that make sense for declaring an array? Yes. Why do I use a squiggly bracket? That's just the syntax. For putting elements in an array. For defining an array with the elements that are in it. Yes?
If it's a two-dimensional array, how would you represent
that? If it's a two-dimensional array, you would put two brackets here. You'd just put another set of brackets and then the number here. We'll get to it when we do. I just don't want to confuse people. I just want to be clear on this, but we'll get to it when we do Visionaire. Because there we do have a two-dimensional array. Any other questions?
Can you show an example of the string way of doing it?
Yes. So a string array, who knows? So what's the first thing I would write? Right. And then what can we name it?
My string array,
sure. And then what size do we want?
10.
Great. And then what would we do here?
Quotes.
Exactly. Quotes. Also separated by commas, you would keep going to 10. Clear? Yeah. Okay. So if you had this, yes.
Just in terms of design, if it tells that it can the line, could we just like press return and then start the next line? Would that be like the next problem?
The question was if it hits the end of the line, like the 80 characters, can you just hit enter? Yeah, I mean some pieces of code won't understand that you've hit enter. So for some, you have to make sure that you don't hit enter at a spot where it won't realize that it's a continuation. But for this, I believe, and don't quote me on it, but I believe that this, if you hit enter in between any of these, there'd be no problem. But obviously, you'll see when you actually do it, because like the colors will change if it's wrong, and you'll get errors if it's wrong. Yes?
But if it's wrong, how do we change it? Since we can't go over the
80. Well, then you can hit an enter, you can hit enter like here. Here, like, there definitely won't be a problem. You know what I mean? Like, there'll always be a place where you can hit enter. The question was, well, if it's a problem, then what do I do? But there will always be a place where you can hit enter, but not every place is a place you can hit enter. Yes?
So, say you establish your array with 10, like, data pieces in.
Right.
What happens, say it's, like, 1 through 5, right? You establish the first 5... But you don't establish like 6 and 10.
Okay.
What happens to those last 5 places in the array? Does it just get a 0 or null or?
Okay. The question is if you create an array of size 10, but you only initialize the first 5 elements in it. You don't say anything about what the rest of them will be. It depends entirely on what memory this accesses. So you have no control, sort of where this array gets its memory. So it's possible that they'll all be null. It's possible that they'll all be zeros, but it's also possible that they could have junk values in them. So the same thing as when you initialize an int, if you, like this int num, if we hadn't put equals 5, it would have just allocated enough memory for an int, but it wouldn't have stored anything in it, and it wouldn't have put a null in it. It would have just left whatever was there there. So later, if you wanted to print out that int, for example, if you did like a printf with num, it could be anything. Like, you really have no idea, which is why you want to initialize all your variables, even if you just initialize them to zero, because you want, if you're ever going to call them, you want to know what's in them. I guess follow-up. Did you have a follow-up to that?
Yeah, real quick. And then, so what if you have kind of the opposite, like you have like 10 values in the array, but you don't establish how big the array is. So like within the first bracket of my array, there's nothing.
Okay, so if you don't initialize the size of your array, it's automatic, and then you put 5 values, it will automatically be an array of size 5. And then if you try to access the, well, okay, let's do this. So if I want to get this 1 here, what do I have to say? So it's the name of the array is my array, and I want to get this 1. What would I do? My array bracket 0. How do I get the 10? My array bracket 9. Exactly. This is very important because when you initialize it, you put a 10 here. But if you ever after this call my array bracket 10, what's going to happen? You're going to get a segmentation fault, which is endearingly called a seg fault. And you can yell at me if it's not true, but I promise you that during the course of the semester, you will get a seg fault at least once. I promise you. And it's most likely going to be, I mean, it's always an issue of accessing memory that you don't have. So sometimes you're accessing memory that you don't have because you're in an infinite loop and you keep asking for more and more memory and the computer just runs out of memory. But sometimes you're accessing memory that you think you have, but you don't. So if I called my array bracket 10, I'd likely get a seg fault because I don't own my array bracket 10. I own my array bracket 0 up until my array bracket 9. Okay, so if you ever get a seg fault, this is where you look. You look in your arrays to make sure you're not going outside the bounds. Because if you think, and you'll do this in section, a lot of this like array stuff will be covered thoroughly in section. But if you think of an array of size 3 as like 3 blocks, then this is index 0, 1, 2. And as soon as you go here, you get a seg fault. Okay, so that was a kind of a long answer to your question because it brought up an important point. So if you don't initialize the value and then you try to go farther, you won't be able to, which is why it's also good practice to always have that number there so that you're aware that you can't go past. Yeah, so she said if you declare it as 10, you have to call it as 9. It's not like declaring it as 10, calling it as 9. It's that this array is of size 10 because it has 10 little boxes you can think of, 10 units of memory that you can access. But the thing is they're not called unit 1, unit 2, up to unit 10. They're called 0 through 9. Okay. How you will write it so that it will call. Right.
But how in the for like when you're putting it in the for loop, how do you like make it so that it calls up the one you want out of the array?
Okay, so the question was, okay, this is great, but when you're in your for loop, how do you make it call the one you want and put it in the actual text? So when you're using your printf, right? When you use your printf, you're going to have a variable in that printf, right? That's going to be this changing text that's not the same in any verse. And then you're going to tell printf, use this variable, this array, and then you're going to have to tell it which space in the array you want to go to. So the first time you'll want to go to array what?
Zero.
The next time array 1, exactly. And like I said before,
can you like write how you're supposed to do it?
I'm not allowed to write how you're supposed to do it. I mean, that's the whole problem set. I mean, that's the whole problem here for you guys to write the actual code for how to do it. So I've given you all the pieces, right? I've told you you're going to have a printf. I've told you it's going to have a variable. I've told you that you're going to make an array. I've written the array for you.
I'm not trying to slack. All I'm saying is, like, I mean, like, is there, like, a formal way? Like, you see how you just wrote, like, this thing? Like, is there, like, a way that you have to write it so that it would call a specific number? That's, like, all I'm saying.
Is there a way you have to write it so it would call a specific number? So if I'm calling... So it's like this, right? My array bracket 0. Or my... Is that all? Okay. Or like my array bracket 1, my array bracket 2. Exactly. So if you wanted the 0, you would call... If you wanted this number 1 here, you'd call my array bracket 0.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, there we go. Okay. So that's the array method of doing it. And we've just done a great lesson in arrays, and you guys will all be experts in section, right? So what if we wanted to do this other suggestion that's up here? So using a function and conditions. So can anyone think about this for a few seconds? Because that's all you have. And tell me how you might implement a function outside of your main function to handle this change.
Could you just create like a method where one of the parameters is a different string? And then, so you have a method that prints it, but there's a variable for each time you have a change, and then you just put in a parameter each time. So you call like 10 versus you call 10 methods.
You call 10 what?
10 methods.
Okay, so one option was, so you would write like 10 different functions. Okay, so one option is you can write...
One function, but call it 10 times.
Okay, and then what would you change about that? So you said one function, you call it 10 different times, great. And you what parameters would you pass to it?
So, okay, it would be a string, basically.
What string would you pass to it?
I mean, 1, 2, 3, and so on.
Okay, so you would pass the string that you... So he said 1, 2, 3, but how would you know to... Like, how are you going to pass 1 and then 2 then 3 as strings? You're in your for loop, right? That's where you were going to call your function. So how does your for loop know the string 1? We're not doing the array method, right? That was one way of doing this. Now we're starting from scratch. All we have is our for loop. How do we know the string 1? We don't. So what kind of, you're right, that you're going to write a function. It's going to be outside of your main function. You're going to call it 10 times from your for loop. Okay, so you said global variable. What would the global variable store?
You could have to have more than one because there are two moving parts in the thing.
So that's like the array thing we already did, right?
I don't know.
No, that's basically the concept behind. So she basically said you would have two different global variables that are accessible that store all the changing parts. That's exactly one way of doing it, which is the array way. Yeah, so now we're trying to think, well, what's another way of doing this? And what's your name?
Sia.
Sia was right in saying that we could write a function that we keep calling, but changing the parameters. So now the question is, in your for loop, what parameter do you have that you could send to this function that would tell this function what to do? Go ahead.
If I equals 1, then I would say this.
So she said, if I equals 1, say this. If I equals 2, say this. Exactly. So you can pass your I in your for loop to this function. And then inside that function, you have conditions that will say, well, depending on what I is, depending on what verse I'm in, what should I print? So that's another way of doing it. There are other ways. There are many other ways. The point, though, here is that there are many ways of doing this that are much, much, much smarter than just using a printf to print out the whole song. Because when you're just printing out 10 verses, you think it's fine, it saves everybody time, it's a great way of doing it. But when you're trying to print out, you know, the Bible or something, you know, like when it's a much bigger file, you definitely want to be thinking about how to factor out common pieces. And that's sort of a big theme in this class so far, right? Factoring out common code, factoring out a problem into smaller parts, right? So you can print out a Bible in a loop? I don't know. I don't know the Bible well. I know we're in Harvard Hall, but I'm not that expert. Okay, so can we move on from old man? Yes? Okay, so old man should have gotten you warmed up. You can go get a snack or something after old man. And then you're going to dive into the Caesar cipher. So this formula here looks complicated. Don't worry, we're going to break it down. But the Caesar cipher is one... really kind of primitive way of encrypting your data, because as soon as someone knows your key, you're kind of done. Because what does the Caesar cipher do? What's the method behind the Caesar cipher? You don't have to understand this formula right now. Just what? All right, so you said whatever you start with, you go 13 letters down the line. So it's not always 13. K can be anything.
Or, it's just a number of,
it's the shift, right?
It's always negative. That's the example.
Yeah, so the example is 13, but it can be any number. So basically, you're taking, let's break down this formula. Let's not do that yet, sorry. Okay, we won't break down the formula yet. We'll just do it in English. So in English, the Caesar cipher, the cipher text, so the new text that's kind of hidden, the cipher text is equal to the text you started with plus the key. So basically, if I do a Caesar cipher of value 1, so if I do Caesar 1 and I have the word cat, what am I going to get? So I have cat, and I'm adding 1 to everything, right? What am I going to get? B, exactly. Okay, so does that make sense? So you're adding a constant value. So this is all C. So this is C1, this is C2, this is C3, this is K, 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 and then this is the, this is not C, this is P. And this is C1, C2, C3. We're going to do this better on a slide, but I just wanted to introduce the concept of the Caesar cipher. So basically what your program is going to do is it's going to take on the command line, the person's going to run your program, and they're going to say Caesar and then a value for K, right? So the person So you're at your prompt, right? And you're typing. So just like when you ran greedy, you type this, right? Greedy, right? Looks familiar? So now someone's going to type this Caesar, and then they're going to put a value for K here. So they're going to put like 5, right? Like Caesar 5. So this means that you're running the program Caesar with a K of 5. So this is just the program you're running, and then this is K. Okay? So this value is very important to you in the program, right? So we have to make sure that we extract this value, because this is how much we're going to have to shift each letter in the phrase by, right? We're going to shift each letter in the phrase we're going to get by 5. So how do we get this 5? Well, here is the lesson on command line arguments. So this is what argc and argv are. So an old man, when you write your main function, it's perfectly sufficient to define main with void in parentheses, right? But in this function, in this program, your main function has to take some arguments, because the person running your program, effectively calling your main function, is passing it some arguments, right? It's passing it this K, this 5. But to pass this 5, for your main to understand this 5, it needs to take in 2 variables, argc and argv. Now, what types are argc and argv? They're not both arrays.
Argc is an integer.
Argc is an integer, exactly. And what's argv? And argv is an array of what? Array of chars, exactly. So it's a string or an array of chars. So it's string argv with the brackets, right? This is your main function now, right? Right, so your main function still returns an int, because it's type int, because it's going to return 0 if all goes well, or 1 if things don't go well, right? So it returns an int, so it's type int. The name of the function is main, and the arguments that it takes is int argc, which is an int, and argv, which is an array of strings. Yes?
What would be the difference? What is the command line? You go to 5 and doing that.
So the question was, what would be the difference between a program that you just run Caesar and then it asks you what is your key or what is your shift and you say 5? That's kind of what you did in Greedy, right? So it would work just fine, but maybe you want, I mean, the reason we're making you do this is because we want you to understand command line arguments. But it really doesn't make that much of a difference if you type the 5 here or after when you're prompted. But there are some programs, and I can't think of one off the top of my head, where you just want to type in the value right away. Right? Like when you enter the program, you want to have that value. So that option has to be there. Yes?
What's the difference between string and char star?
What's the difference between string and char star? Nothing. They're identical. String doesn't actually exist. String was created for you by CS50 so that you don't have to worry about char stars. Because once you get to week 5 and you actually start to understand char stars, or week 6 maybe, you are going to be grateful that you didn't have to think about them now. Let's put it that way. So string is the same as a char star. So this could be written as char star argv. Right? Same thing.
Why does argv have square brackets after it?
Why does argv have square brackets after it? Because it's an array. It's an array of strings. Right? The other argv would have had brackets around it too. I just didn't finish writing it because I was going to erase. But they would both have brackets. Yeah. Yes. So can I explain what in argc means? So argc means argument count. We haven't gotten to it yet, so it's a great segue. So argc is the argument count. So it's the number of arguments that have been typed at the command line. So if I've typed, this is my command line, right? So if I've typed this, what is the value of argc? Does everyone agree? Is the value of argc 1? 2. The value of argc here is 2, because you have 2 arguments. It seems, and it's kind of a trick question, I knew you would say 1. Right, it's Caesar and 5. So it makes sense that you would say, well, there's only one real argument being passed, because it's true, we know the value of our program. All we really care about is this argument being passed to it. But for argc's purposes, this is 2 arguments. Okay, so it's the name of the program is the first argument, and the other parameters that are passed to it are arguments 2, 3, 4, depending how many you have.
So why do you need an argument count?
So the question is, why do you need to know how many arguments? Well, why do you need to know how many arguments? Who knows? Who has any idea why it would ever be important to you to know how many arguments were passed?
Well, for example, in this homework problem, you just want one argument passed, right? So if there are more, then you have this one and the other.
Exactly. So she said... Yes, so exactly. So for this problem, you want to make sure that the user has only passed one argument. So if they've passed too many arguments, you want to yell at them. Similarly, if they've only said Caesar, so argc is equal to what? If they only said Caesar, exactly, argc is equal to 1. So if argc is equal to 1, your program doesn't know what to do because it doesn't have a value to shift by. So if it tries to do something, it'll seg fault probably, or it will have a lot of errors. So you have to make sure that there is another argument here before you can access that argument.
So are you supposed to set that equal to 2 in the parentheses then, or would you do that somewhere else?
The question was, are you supposed to set that equal to 2 in the parentheses? No. So the main gets these parameters not from you. It gets these parameters from the command line. Okay, so this is how you write your main function. You never tell main what argc is, right? Because you don't know what argc will be when people run your function and run your program, right? Because if you were to put argc is equal to 2 here, and I put in the 3 values, 3 arguments, your program would crash.
But then in your code, you have to specify like if argc greater than
then do something. Exactly. So she said, but then in your code, you have to specify if argc is equal to blah blah blah, do blah blah blah. And that's exactly where we're going. So for the first part of this, like she said over there, I don't know your name, sorry. What is it?
Amy.
Okay, so like Amy said, you want to make sure that they've only put in one argument. So if argc is not equal to 1, you're going to complain to them and you're going to exit the program.
I thought it was 2.
Sorry. If argc is not equal to 2. Thank you, sorry. If argc is not equal to 2, you're going to complain and you're going to exit the program. So you're going to return 1 and exit. That's the effect of the exiting, just by writing return 1. So do you understand return values? If you return 0, everything's fine. If you return 1, there's been an error.
If you return 1,
if you would, so like for this, is it okay if your program doesn't do anything? So if it returns one, it's just going to pass the program. It's not going to let you say it's like,
so she said if you return one, it's just going to exit the program. It's not going to say anything. Yeah. So if you wanted to say something before returning one, you would do a printf, say, you must type in two arguments and then return one. Like you.
So basically, you don't have, like in the past, like problem set, there were things where when you error check, it had to keep prompting the user until they finally did it. But this, you don't have to.
Right. So she said, do you have to keep prompting the user until they do it right? No. Because they're entering at the command line, they're going to have to rerun the program if they have entered it wrong. Yes. Amy, do you have a question? No. Okay, great. Okay, so this is your command line. So we've discussed argc. So now what's argv? If argc is an int that tells you how many arguments there are, what's argv? Right, so argc is Caesar 5. Exactly. So argc is the string of what you actually typed at the command line. Okay? So it's what you actually typed at the command line. Yes?
Sorry, actually, could you go back to return value again? So like, if you return one, what does the program actually do?
If you return one, the program will exit. And then if you wanted to see like a history of your program, you would see exited with status one, which would mean that there was some sort of error. And you as the programmer would know, oh, I remember when I said to return one, it was if they didn't type in the right arguments. Yes, but then if you had said return zero, it would also exit, but it would exit thinking that everything was fine. You don't want that. Yes.
Sorry, so what exactly, okay, so I understand why you need argc for error checking. What do you need argv for? Do you also need that for error
checking? Oh, I said, what do you need argv for? Well, you need argv because you need this 5. Right? You need this 5. This is your shift, so you need to get this 5. And this 5 is stored in argv. And also, I think I led you astray. So this actually is either char star argv with the brackets, because then it would be an array of chars, or it's just a string argv.
Oh, there are no brackets.
Right. Sorry, I was going to write char star argv with the brackets, because that's what I always write, but then I said, oh, well, I'll give them strings, because it's easier to understand, and then I led you astray. So
you need to take that string argv out. That's
so now you have this in your main function, right? You have access to this variable argv. Okay, and I'm actually going to rewrite it as a char star just because I like working with it as a char star, because that's what it actually is. So char star argv is an array of chars. So it's a string, and it has all of this inside of it. So you have all of this. Put your hands down until I explain it. Okay, so you have all of this inside of argv, and you want to get to this. Okay? So I'm not going to tell you how to do it. I can't tell you how to do it. So, but you know that this is all stored as a string in argv, right? And you want to get to this 5. And so some of the things you're going to need to, so what's argv 0?
Caesar.
Argv 0 is going to be Caesar, exactly. And what's going to be argv 1? 5. Exactly. So argv 0 is Caesar, argv 1 is 5. But 5 is a char, right? And if you had like 12, it would be 2 chars, right? Because that's what it reads everything in the command line as. It doesn't read these as numbers, as ints. So that's where you're going to use the function isDigit to check for each digit of argv 1. For each character of argv1, you're going to need to check if it's a digit. Okay? If it's a, that's going to mean, is it a number from 0 to 9, right? You're going to have to check that for each one. So if I gave you like 123, you would have to check if the 1 is between 0 and 9, if the 2 is between 0 and 9, if the 3 is between 0 and 9. And if they're all between 0 and 9, then you use the function, so this is isDigit. And you can look at its man page to see how to use it and what libraries to include if you use it. And then you're going to use the function a2i, which takes a string and converts it to an integer. But a2i only works if you give it digits. So check that these are digits, then pass this to a2i, and it will return an integer value. That integer will be your k. Okay? Will be the amount of your shift.
Okay.
Okay, so here's your command line. You're going to argv1. You're checking if it's a digit. You're converting it from a string to an int. And then you have your k. And you're ready to perform your shift. So then, once you have your k, you know how much you're going to shift by. Now all you need is the word that you're going to shift. Okay? So now, you're going to prompt your user, much like you did in greedy, you know, what word would you like to cipher? Or like, what, you know, give me a phrase, please. The user then is going to type in a phrase. And what are you going to use to get that phrase from the user? Get string, exactly. So at this point, you're going to use get string to get whatever the user typed in. So now, looking at our formula, we already talked about this, right? So what is C? What is C? The ciphertext. So it's the text once it's been ciphered. So the ciphertext is equal to, what is P? Right, so it's like the plain text that we're getting. So you're going to take the plain text, you're going to add K, which is the shift, then modulo 26. We'll worry about modulo 26 in a second. But you're going to want so now you're getting P, right, by prompting the user. C is what you're going to return at the end in one big printf where you write out the ciphertext. K is what we just got from the command line, and P is what we're getting in get string. Right? So you get the string from the user, and you're going to want to do what with it?
Convert it.
Why do you want to convert it?
Well, I mean, you want to add K to...
Oh, okay, you want to shift it, right. So you're going, can you just add K to the word dog?
No.
Exactly. You can't. So what do you want to do? You have to go letter by letter, right? So you're going to have to go letter by letter in the string. So you have a string. You know that a string is an array of chars, and you're going to have to go letter by letter in this string. So that's the same as going element to element in an array, right? So this is very similar to what we did in Old Man when we worked with arrays. So this time, you're going into the array, and for each letter in the word, or for each element in this array of chars, you're going to add k to it, right? But you can't just add k.
How do you know what each letter, how is it going to know what each letter of the alphabet stands for?
Oh, how are you going to know what each letter of the alphabet stands for? So there's an ASCII table. I don't know, you guys have seen the ASCII table, right?
Yes.
Everyone's nodding. Okay, so the ASCII table will map letters to numbers. So does anyone know what lowercase a is?
65.
Lowercase a. 97. Lowercase a is 97 in single quotes. Right? So if you put a, lowercase a in single quotes, the computer interprets that as the number 97. So this is another instance like that 10 for verses where you don't necessarily want to just put the number because the person reading it might not have looked at ASCII for a while and they might say, wait, what's 97? So if you just put lowercase a in quotes, they know that you're taking the numerical value of a. These are single quotes. That's important. Yes?
Why do you have to use the ASCII table?
Because you have to somehow map these letters to numbers, right? You can't add 5 to A. That doesn't make sense, right? The computer doesn't know the letter that comes 5 after A. So you have to tell it, well, this is the ASCII value of A. I want the ASCII value of the letter 5 away from A, which is going to be what? 5 away from A. What's the number? 102, exactly. So it's going to take, so it's going to know, oh, I need the letter of the value 102. Yes.
But since we have like the string is like an array of characters, right? So can we just instead of defining a first letter as array one, can we define it as array one plus k? Where did that shift it to the?
So he said instead of referring to it as array one, you refer to it as array one plus k. But that's just going to take the k plus one letter of your word. You're not trying to shift the word. You're not trying to shift the word within itself. You're trying to add the same value to each letter in the word. So like when we did dog and we added one to each one, or I don't know what word we did, I forgot. But when we add one to each, you're adding the same value to each letter to move it over. So if you add one to A, you should get B. Yeah.
So this means that at some point you have to turn the user's input into an array.
That means at some point you have to turn the user's input into an array. So the user's input is what? Right now. It's a string, which is an array. You already have an array with the user's input. So if you're storing, so you're using get string, right? Let's say you store that in a variable called user's word, or plain text, you can call it. Then plain text bracket what is the first letter of that word? Plain, exactly, zero. So plain text bracket zero is the first letter of the word that the user typed in. Okay, so now you take that first letter, and you want to, you're going to have to add K to it. But what happens if that first letter is Z, and you add, let's say K is 5. So if you add, if you go 5 away from Z in the ASCII table, you're in some weird punctuation. You're not in alphabetical characters anymore.
You so you have to have it start back over.
Exactly. So you have to have it start back over, meaning wrap around the alphabet. So that's why we have this modulo 26. Because remember what modulo does. It gives you the remainder. So it will always be, so what will anything modulo 26 always be? What will be its values? Between 0 and 25. So this is good. This is better than being in 98, 99, et cetera, which aren't letters. But 0 to 25 are also not letters. Right? So we have to get back in the letter zone. So the problem here is before we can apply the shift, we have to get back to zero, add the shift, and then get back to the letters. So how do we get from lowercase a to zero?
Subtract
97. So lowercase b is what? 98. So how do we get from, for what do we want b to be once we apply the shift? If a is zero, what do we want b to be?
One.
So what do we do to b to get it to one?
Subtract
97, exactly. So you want to shift everything down to be between 0 and 25. Then you apply the shift, so you add k to everything. Then you modulo by 26, and then you add back the 97. Yes?
Does it ignore spaces?
No. You should. You need to ignore spaces. But what we've talked about thus far doesn't take into account anything. So far. So we haven't taken into account spaces. We're going to get to it. But let me just see if there are any questions on this. Yeah.
That's only going to work for lowercase letters, right?
And this is only going to work for lowercase letters, exactly. So that's how we're doing lowercase from A to Z. Uppercase is what? What's an uppercase A?
65.
So if we're dealing with uppercase letters, we're shifting by 65. Exactly. So now she said, so there should be some if thing. Yeah, there should be a condition to ask if you're in the lowercase zone or if you're in the uppercase zone.
Or if you're in, do you care about punctuation?
Do you care about punctuation?
No.
No, you just want to leave it. So if you're in the lowercase zone, apply this whole shift. So this whole formula, basically. If you're in the uppercase zone, apply this whole formula. Otherwise, don't do anything. Right? Yes. So how do you get from the char to the number? So if you put the char in single quotes, it's going to consider it a number. So if you put an A in single quotes, it's going to consider it a number. And when you do the arithmetic, you'll play around with it, and you'll make sure that you're getting back a letter. I can't give away that much. But you...
So you can treat it as an integer?
You can treat all chars as integers, yes. Yes, you can do calculations. Yes. 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 Is digit works on one character at a time, yes. So you have to go through each character in this string. In argv1, you have to go through each character making sure it's a digit. A to I will work on the entire string. Yeah.
Oh, so if digit has to, you have to do array, you have to like write for array, like one.
Yes, yes. For is digit, you have to go through each letter.
We would also have that we want to prevent argv1 from being greater than 25.
So do you have to prevent argv1 from being greater than 25?
Yeah.
No, why not?
Well, it wraps back.
Because it wraps back around. So you're always guaranteed to be between 0 and 25 before adding back your 97 or your 65. Okay, so here are some of the tools that we've talked about. I think we've hit on all of them. Sterlen, except for Sterlen, I guess. What's Sterlen?
String
length, right? So obviously you'll need to know the string length if you want to go through every letter of the string. You want to know how many times to go through. Why do you need to know? You need to know how many letters there are in a string so you know how many times to perform all these shifts. You need to know how many letters to go for. You're not going to be able to know. You have to use this function to find out the length of the word. All right, so these are all the tools. You guys can look up an ASCII table easily on Google if you want to actually look at the values of these numbers. Is digit and A2R are the ones we discussed for seeing that your command line argument that has the value of K, you have to make sure that the user typed in numbers. So K has to be numerical. So the way you check that it's numerical is using the function isDigit. And A2I will convert that string, because everything at the command line is a string. The command line takes in everything as a string. You need to convert it to an integer. And A2I takes a string and converts it to an integer if it's composed of digits. She said, do you have to stop the argument count from being 3? Well, yes, you're checking if the argument count is not equal to 2, you want to complain.
Okay.
Yes.
We also want to prevent it from being negative, because hypothetically, if it had a negative k, then you can just go back.
Do you have to prevent k from being negative? I am not sure. Check the problem set. I think that you don't. I think you want only positive integers, but it's possible that the problem set wants you to handle both, so just make sure. Okay. So the challenges here that we've discussed are, how do we preserve case and how do we leave the spaces unchanged? Okay, so those are the two big challenges that we've basically addressed here, but you guys are actually going to have to implement. So just thinking about each of these, when you're writing this code, make sure you think at each point, well, what do I do if it's lowercase? What do I do if it's uppercase? What do I do if it's a space or punctuation? When I say spaces, I mean basically everything that's not an alphabetical letter. Okay? Okay, so that's it for Caesar. So now we're going to take a tape break so that Chris can change the tape, because there's only a certain number of minutes on a tape. So we're going to come back in like 3 to 5 minutes, and we're going to do Visionaire. Okay, so take a break, and you can get water, go to the bathroom, whatever. Okay, so let's pick back up. So now we've done the Caesar cipher, now we're looking at the Visionaire cipher. So the Visionaire cipher is a little bit more difficult to crack than the Caesar cipher, because you need an entire word rather than just one number. However, it's also more difficult to implement because of that. So there's a trade-off. But of course, you guys are going to have to implement this as well. And you'll find that a lot of the stuff that you already have in Caesar will help you to write Visionaire. So one good thing to do, maybe, to get you started on this, if you really don't know where to start for Visionaire and you finish Caesar, just copy and paste Caesar into Visionaire. Just start with that. And then think about what some key differences are. So let's look at the actual cipher. Let's look at the formula, and let's see how it's different than Caesar. And it should be very apparent, right? So just speaking of the formula, don't look at the example, just look at the formula. And what is different about the Caesar formula and the Visionaire formula? There's a J, exactly. So the little subscript J under the K was not there before, because if K started as 5, K was always 5, and you always added 5. What happens to K here? What's the subscript J doing?
It's manipulating based upon another number.
Okay, so K is moving along based on a different number than P and C are moving along, right? So P and C, remember, are plain text and ciphertext. So the ciphertext, the first letter of ciphertext, is directly related to the first letter of plain text, right? So when you're putting out ciphertext I, you're using plain text I to get there. But you're not necessarily using the ith letter of your key. Do you understand why?
Yeah.
they're not necessarily matching length. That's one thing. So here, the k here is foo bar, so that's length 6, and hello world is longer than 6, right? So they're not necessarily matching lengths, whereas ciphertext and plain text always are matching lengths. And then what's another thing? Not only are they not matching lengths, but exactly, you have to skip the spaces. So you didn't add, so when you're adding foo, you have hello world, and you're adding foo bar, but you're not adding r to the comma or to the space. You're adding r to the w. Oh. Someone said, oh my God. I know, I was doing it for the camera's benefit. We all know.
Yeah. Like, so it's like a double Caesar cipher?
Since it's like a double Caesar cipher, not really. What are you doing around your key? What are you doing around your key? It starts with a W. It rhymes with nap. So you're wrapping around your key. You might run out of letters for your key if your phrase is longer than your key, and you have to wrap around it. And so you're going to have to add back the F, right? So there are a few challenges here, right? But that's why you get this phrase at the end that's just so well encrypted, right? No one could ever break it. So it's worth it, right?
How is O plus A O? I'm sorry.
How is
A zero?
How is O? Oh, yeah, we'll get to it. Yeah, so O plus A is O because the way we're working with the key, which we'll get to, but jumping the gun now, A, when you're adding these values, you're not adding A as 97 or 65, you're adding A as 0, and Z as 25.
So basically the cipher is the same as the Caesar cipher, except you're adding a different value of K.
Yeah, so the question was, so the cipher is the same as the Caesar cipher, except you're adding a different value of K each time. Yes. Effectively, yes, K is just changing, but you have to be very careful about when you're using which letter of K. Because you don't want to add it to the commas or the spaces, and you want to wrap around. So there are some considerations. But yeah, thinking about it, just in theory, yes, it's performing the same kind of operations.
Did you try writing the visionary cipher first and then just copy-pasting it into the Caesar cipher and then just changing it so it'll only take a one-letter key as opposed to a multi-letter key because they're otherwise in the same?
So she said, could you write the visionary cipher first and then just change it so that the Caesar cipher is taking a one-letter key? I guess it would probably be a poorly designed Caesar cipher because it would be doing a lot more work in a lot more complicated way than it needs to be. And you're probably better off doing Caesar first anyway because Visionary will be easier because of what you've learned in Caesar. So like command line arguments now, you basically don't really need to, you basically have all that written. Okay, so this is what we're doing. These are the differences that we just discussed. So the key is alphabetical. So this means that basically it parallels what we just did in Caesar where we used isDigit to check if you're giving a numerical key. In this case, you're using isAlpha to check if you're giving an alphabetical key. And in this case, you don't need something like A2I because you already have a string. You don't need to convert to a string, right? Or sorry, you don't need to convert to an int because you need a string and you have a string. Okay? So what you need to do is find the key's numerical value. So I just gave that to you. This is what we kind of skipped ahead to. So you know that A is supposed to be 0. Uppercase and lowercase a are 0 for when you're adding them, right? So in the plain text, lowercase a is still 97, uppercase a is still 65. But when you're adding a in the key, when the key has an a, that a, whether it's uppercase or lowercase, is 0. And that Z is 25. So when you shift by A, and so if I had a string that was just A, that would be shifting by how much? So what would the ciphertext look like? Exactly. So it's a shift by 0, so the ciphertext looks exactly the same. Okay, so the challenge that we talked about is you have to know when to advance the key. So you don't want to advance the key on spaces. And you also have to worry about wrapping around the key. So let's think of the things, so let's remember the things that are the same so that you're more relieved and so you think there's a lot of usable code. So you have your command line arguments, you already have them there, you're just going to check is alpha, but the same way that you complained when there weren't two command line arguments in Caesar, you're going to complain when there aren't two command line arguments here. You'll have your command line arguments, you'll use the same exact for loop to go through the plain text and apply the shift, but the shift is going to be a little bit different, right? It's not going to be drastically different, but instead of adding the constant K for your key, you're going to add a letter of the key, or in this case, of foobar. Okay, so you need to know not to advance it on space, not to replace spaces and commas and punctuation and stuff, but you already did that, right? You already left those unchanged in Caesar. So that part is fine. You won't be changing things inadvertently. However, you want to make sure that you're not advancing to the next letter of your key at these times. So you've already taken into account that you're not going to change the plain text when it's a punctuation or a space. You've already accounted for that. That's fine. But if you don't think about it, you might inadvertently move to the next letter of your key when you don't want to, which is equally bad. Right? Because then no one will be able to decipher it. So you want to make sure that you're, just like you're only applying a shift when you're between lowercase a and lowercase z, you're applying one type of shift. When you're between uppercase a and uppercase z, you're applying a different kind of shift. In that same way, you only want to advance your key when it has already been used. So if you've added a letter of your key, then advance your key. Do not advance your key every time you enter the loop. You're advancing your ciphertext every time you enter the loop, and you're advancing your plain text every time you enter the loop, because they advance at the same time, and they advance regardless of whether you've whether it's a space or punctuation, because you have to read in every letter. But your key doesn't advance every time. So you only advance your key after you've found a lowercase or an uppercase letter and added a shift. Yes?
So the C shift stays constant, but K keeps changing?
She said, so the C shift stays constant, but K keeps changing.
Yeah, because from the Caesar cipher, you have a C, it's a certain number. So like say your K, or say you're changing it by like 13 or whatever. That was your K. But like now, are you changing it?
She said, so now K is changing with every letter. Well, K, if K is a string of length 1, it's never really changing, right? If K is just the letter A, it's basically a Caesar cipher, right? Because you're just adding 0 to everything. So K is going to change as often as its length is, you know?
So if you said like K is B, then each one would change one letter?
If K is B, then every, yes. If K is the string B, then everything would only change by one letter. So it's, again, a Caesar cipher. And if similarly, if K is a string that's 10,000 characters long, it would change every time, right? But if it's 3, it's going to change 3 times, then go back to the normal and change. It's going to go wrapping around, right? So you're basically incrementing K every time you've applied a shift. And every time you increment K, what do you have to make sure you're not doing? By increment K, I mean like go to K J plus 1. So it's really incrementing J. If you're thinking about K as an array and J as the index of that array, every time you go to the next spot in the array, what do you have to make sure you're not doing? Going beyond the bounds of the array, exactly. So how do you make sure you never go beyond how many letters your key is?
You have to know the size of the array.
You have to know the size of that key. You have to know the length of that string. So you have to use strlen, right? And you have to make sure that you do what to make sure you're within that strlen?
To go one less than it is.
To go one less than it is, yeah. So you never want to go beyond one less than the length of the string. But how do you make sure that J is never greater than one less than the length of your string?
Why?
you reset J once it?
So someone said you reset J once it gets past it. How do you reset J? Mod, exactly. So mod's our best friend, right? We've used it in like every problem so far. So mod is going to make sure that you stay between zero and the length of your string, zero and one, the length of your string minus one. Right? So if the key the person passes in is five letters long, what do you want to mod by? Five. And that way you're definitely between zero and four. And if you access letters 0 and 4, 0 through 4 of that array of chars, you're going to get all five letters. Right? Let's go back to our differences. Yes.
How do you know what K is?
How do you know what K is? Well, I leave that up to you. How do you know what K is? What do you think? We just said we're accessing each letter in K, right? Well, no, so you have K, right, from Caesar. Like, the same way we got K in Caesar, we're going to get K now, except we're going to already have a string. We don't have to convert to a string. We have to make sure it's alphabetical. But then we have K, and K is a string. And now, whenever we need to add K, in this case, we're adding the next letter of K, right, the next letter of our key. So we're going to access that letter with this J that we're advancing. Right?
Okay, I'm sorry, I'm kind of confused. Okay, so the K that's being added, this new K with the being here.
Yeah.
Can we just, like, okay, so I understand that now it's a whole word, but how do we, like, so does the, instead of typing like a five, like, that's that being here, five, would it be like a whole word?
Yes, so instead of typing the question, instead of typing the five here, you would type, like, foo. You would type foo. So now argv1 is storing the string foo. And you want to tell argv1, give me the first letter of foo. And this is where you get kind of the two-dimensional array, right? Because you have argv bracket 1. So it's like the second element of this array. So argv bracket 1. And now you're going to tell it bracket 0. And what does that give you? If this is your command line. What does argv bracket 1 bracket 0 give you if this is at your command line? Argv 1 bracket 0. F, exactly. Because you're going to your command line, so that's argv, the argument values. You're going to 1, index 1. So this is index 0, and this time it would be visionnaire, right? But let's... whatever. So this would be argument 0. This is argument 1. And then within argument 1, you want to access the 0 index.
Also, you're treating them both as...
Right, because this is a string, and this is an array of strings.
So this is an array in array.
So this is an array within an array. I mean, you can avoid the issue, sort of, by just storing argv1 right. In a string variable. And then just going to that string variable, bracket 0, bracket 1, bracket 2. So you don't really have to think about it, but you should understand that under the hood, this is a two-dimensional array. Okay, so that's how you're getting each letter of foo, and then once you get the letter, you have to make sure that it's between 0 and 25 by shifting it, right?
So each one is good. So after every 3, it'll be the same. So it'll be like foo.
She said, so after every 3, it would be the same. Yeah, so in this case, since foo... is 3 letters long, every 3 you'll be doing foo again. Yeah.
So do we decide what goes in the space in foo, or do we have to use foo?
Do we decide what goes in the space in foo, or do we have to use foo? Your user decides what goes in foo. This is a command line argument. So your user is going to type visionnaire and then whatever they want, and you have to make sure your program works with whatever they type. The question is how can you account for everything they could possibly type? Well, one way is you're going to make sure they've typed the correct number of things. Second way, you're going to use, like someone said, isAlpha to make sure they typed in alphabetical characters. We're not going to shift anything by punctuation marks or anything like that. Okay? And I leave you with this challenge of how to account for everything that they could possibly type in. No, but really, it's a really, really cool problem set once you actually get into it. And so just so that I know, did you guys read the problem set before coming here?
Yeah.
Okay. So keep reading it before you come here so that we can kind of actually work through the problems. Okay. Thank you all for coming. I'll stay if you have questions.